Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cowboy Seeks a Romantic by Marley Michaels. Narrated by Amy Melissa Bentley and Mason Lloyd. 1. Molly. Something is up. I don't know what. I don't know why I'm feeling this way. But it's like I've got a sixth sense that something in the universe isn't quite right tonight. I have to ignore it, though, because the Lion's Lair Tavern is pumping for a Tuesday, and I'm dishing out drinks and handing out meals like there's no tomorrow. There's country music blasting over the speakers, competing with the loud thrum of conversation, as local ranchers and townsfolk talk and yell, and wind down after a long day. The energy in the bar is at an all-time high. Yet, despite that, I feel like the walking dead. Maybe it's just because I'm so goddamn tired, it's a miracle I'm still standing. But surviving in a perpetual state of exhaustion isn't new to me, working 3 jobs and raising my 3 siblings to keep my family together, all done with a big, albeit sometimes fake, smile on my face, is my new normal. Or it has been, recently, anyway. A quick glance at the clock reminds me I still have 3 hours of my shift left, which means at least 3.5 hours until I can collapse face first into a bed for a maximum of 6 hours before I've got to get up, shake myself off, and do it all over again tomorrow. The life of a responsible adult who just happens to be a surrogate parent to 3. But I could be a zombie, and I'd still feel the presence of Beau Barnes in the same room as me. Ever since he walked in with his brothers, Jesse, Randy, and Sawyer, and Kendra, Jesse's wife, my boss at the vet clinic, aka job number 1, and my best friend, I found my gaze drifting over to their corner, smiling to myself, and sometimes not even realize I'm doing it. Something about that man just makes me feel calmer. Eric, my boss here at the lair, job number 2, keeps me on task, though, making sure I've always got something to do. Once this happy hour crowd dies down, it should be just the regulars and the old-timers who don't want to go home alone. Then I'll have a small chance for a breather. I like working at the tavern. It fills my adult socialization quota every night I'm here. I get good conversation, a few laughs, and great tips, all of which go into my birthday and Christmas fund for the kids and pays for their extracurriculars. Because when you've suffered the loss of not one, but 2 parents, you hang out for the good times to drown out the sad ones. So I do everything I can to make sure those good times are amazing ones. When our father passed away suddenly a few years ago, I vowed to my 2 brothers and sister that our little family would be my sole focus. I'd live, die, and bleed for them just to keep us all together. I gave up college where I was studying to be a nurse and dedicated my life to raising my siblings. That's why I work as hard as I do, why I made that decision to give up my life and aspirations to make sure Coulson, Sage, and Cody have the best possible life they can have and get all the chances in life to do whatever they set their mind to. It's a small sacrifice to pay for their eternal happiness. My 3rd job, yes, 3, is being an errand girl around my small hometown of Kinleyville for anyone who needs something done for them. That ranges from grocery shopping, baking, dog walking, helping Ellie Mae out at the Barnes family's supply store, and even filling in when Beatrice is short of workers at Betty's Diner. You name it, if it helps them out and they're willing to pay me for it, I'll do it. Sometimes I don't even get paid in money. My old high school English teacher, Mrs. Murphy, gives me a never-ending supply of freshly laid eggs from her chicken coop and surplus fruit from her backyard orchard. Or there's even Mr. Morrison down at the boat shop who will give me a fresh fish or 2 for dinner. All of it is appreciated, even if I am more than aware that I'm the town's resident charity case. Beggars can't be choosers, and 3 kids are not cheap to clothe and feed when you don't have a college degree or any trade skills to lean on. But at the end of every day, when I get home, I know I've worked hard for everything we have, Because I refuse to take handouts, and I flat out deny anyone who wants to give us charity without my offering of something in return. That's my own stubborn pride, though. Call it my fatal flaw, because I will happily die on that hill. Unfortunately, my work and family obligations leave very little time left for me. I haven't had a date in... oh, I can't even remember how long. Unless, of course, I count the night I got the job here at the tavern while out boot scooting with Kendra, Jesse, and the very gentle and kind Beau. I sigh whenever I think about him. If I was older, less responsible, and didn't have the world balanced so precariously on my shoulders, he's definitely the kind of man I'd want to date. Probably the only one. He's the perfect romantic hero rolled up in a handsome rancher package that any woman within the town limits would want to unwrap. But he's out of my league, due to all of the above. And even if he was, I think the fact that I'm close to half his age would be enough to put a pin in that idea. "Moss, you okay?" Kendra says, appearing out of nowhere opposite me. I lift my head and meet her furrowed gaze. "You look like you need a break." I lean my elbows onto the counter and throw her a sardonic smile. "Is that your polite way of telling me I look like poop?" She reaches over and rests her hand on my arm. It's me checking on my person to make sure she's not burning her seemingly never-ending candle at both ends. Shooting her a grin, I shake my head. "I'm okay, Candy. I'm just worn out, drained, struggling to be everything for everyone." A snort escapes my lips, chased by a resigned sigh. I'd just kill for a gallon of strong coffee and 12 hours of sleep. "You should get the recipe for Ellie Mae's cowboy brew. That will give you a caffeine kick for days and have you bouncing on air," Kendra's husband, Jesse, says, coming up behind my best friend and wrapping his arms around her. Kendra grins up at him, her eyes going all soft and gooey, serving as an unfortunate reminder of everything I want but can't have right now, that being a life. And as they've done most of the night, hell, every night I'm working and Beau Barnes is at the lair, my gaze drifts over to where he's standing, beer bottle in hand, watching the dance floor and laughing with his brothers, Randy and Sawyer. "Snap out of it, Molly." I could, if he wasn't so damn dreamy. To look at, Beau's quiet and strong with an amazing smile. Dark blonde hair that's a little long on top, the perfect length to run your hands through. Then his gentle giant brown eyes are so deep and rich in color that it makes you want to dive into them and never come up for air. Plus, there's his big, bulky, tattooed body that is the epitome of a man who works hard on the land and has the muscles to show for it. All of that would be enough to make any girl melt like a popsicle on a hot day. But then there's his personality, something only those of us lucky enough to spend a little one-on-one time with him get to recognize. He's attentive, doesn't miss a thing, and loyal as the day is long. He's also sweet, kind, and has a dry wit that he only lets fly when he's comfortable or knows you well. I see him as one of those silent alpha types that waits and watches until it's time to take what he wants. I may be romanticizing the guy because I know it'll never happen between us, but those silent alphas are a favorite of mine in romance novels I read. They're protectors, nurturers, men who want to take all your troubles away and carry the load while encouraging their heroine to be the best she can possibly be. The quiet alpha is the stuff dreams are made of. And I like to look at Beau and imagine all of those things. I'm like a little girl crushing on her dad's best friend or something. I probably seem pathetic, but it's all the action I have in my life right now.
"You know,"
Jesse starts, his eyes going to the corner where his brothers are gathered before returning to me. He wraps his arm around Kendra's shoulders as he rests an elbow on the bar.
"My brother probably needs another beer. Maybe you could go deliver it to him?"
Kendra bites her lip,
my eyes crinkling at the sides. I think he might be real thirsty. Jesse grins down at her.
Parched, even.
I fix my narrowed gaze on the two lovebirds. Ever since they came here months ago for their first date and dragged me and Beau along, they've been trying to play matchmaker and get me and Beau together. Except I made my thoughts on that particular scenario very clear to Kendra. And probably Beau, too, when he called me a few times after our double date, and I got so caught up in life stuff that I didn't get back to him. We're on friendly terms, though. So there's that, at least. And really, it's better this way. Friendship is all I can offer these days. And let's just pretend a man like Beau, who, like his brothers, has all the women in town vying for the chance to set their cowgirl boots next to his bed at night, could even be interested in me. I think he deserves something more than just friends. Add that to our age gap and the fact I can't have a life until my youngest brother, Cody, is of age, then I have even less to give. So, romantic thoughts aside, the only focus I can have right now is working and navigating life's ups and downs. Then when Cody goes off to college, I'll start living again. That's the plan, anyway. Pity that by then, I'll be 30 and Beau Barnes will be 45 and most likely married with a gaggle of mini ranchers running around. I'll have missed my chance by a long shot. So it's best not to even entertain the possibility of Beau and me. Fake it till you make it, Molly. I straighten and make quick work of getting another round of drinks for Jesse and his brothers, adding the beers to his tab and getting him to sign off on it. He thanks me, then Kendra and I watch him take them over, my best friend doing so with a swoony girl-in-love expression on her face. He's right, you know, she says. About what? Kendra arches a brow and commences a stare down with me, one which I win because, hello, I live with two teenagers. She acquiesces with a sigh. Oh, all right, I'll let it go. That makes me smile. I'll try to say goodbye before we leave for the night. Look forward to it, Candy, and thank you. Her head jerks. For what? For being my person and standing by me even when I know you don't agree with some of the decisions I make. Babe, you are the most selfless, hardworking, determined, and dedicated woman, sister, and person I've ever met. I'm honored to be your friend and have your back, whether you need it or not. I have to blink rapidly to stop my eyes from stinging. But, she says, waving her hand in the air in front of me, this whole work yourself into the ground and sacrifice everything for everyone else gig is going to break you if you're not careful. She levels me with a stare. All I'm saying is keep an open mind, okay? Don't shut yourself off to something just because you think you have to dedicate everything you have to everyone else. We're allowed to be selfish now and then. It's human nature. Actually, it's a human need occasionally. So, she says, shutting me up when I open my mouth to argue, I'll leave you be for now. But know that we all want what's best for you. Yeah? Thanks, babe. Right. Now, Neville Nightingale is at the end of the bar drooling over that bottle of Jack on the shelf, so I think you might want to go put him and his liver out of their misery. I giggle and glance down the bar. And sure enough, one of the regulars is eyeing up the liquor bottle like he's a starving man in a desert, and that's his oasis. See you at work tomorrow? I ask her as I slowly move away. Sure thing. I'll be there with bells on. Forget the bells, but I won't say no to Betty's bear claws. Done deal, she says with a laugh, lifting her hand in a salute before moving through the crowd, leaving me walking down the line to serve drinks and do what I seem to do best these days, work my butt off. An hour later, I walk out from the kitchen with a tray of freshly washed glasses, sliding them onto the bar and grabbing a cloth to polish them ready for tomorrow. As I do, my eyes scan the room, surprised and disappointed when I see that Kendra, Jesse, and the Barnes brothers must have left while I was out back. It's not even close to last call yet either, so I feel a little bereft knowing they're no longer here, which makes no sense. I've worked many a night here over the past 6 months, where my friends haven't been here eating, drinking, and dancing the night away. But tonight I felt off. So maybe they're feeling that shift in the air, too? Something feels different, and despite racking my brain over it while serving drinks and nattering with the bar's regulars all night, I haven't been able to work out what or why I'm feeling this way. That's until a knock on the bar pulls me away from my thoughts, and my eyes lift to the soft, gentle, chocolate-brown gaze of Beau Barnes standing not far from me. I shoot him the most camouflaged smile I can muster, his brows narrowing to the point of confusion as he looks me up and down, seemingly conflicted by something. What is it?
Molly, we've got a problem.
My head jerks, and now I'm the one frowning. We have a problem? What kind of problem could Beau and I have at 10 on a Tuesday night? He's not making sense.
The kids are outside in my truck.
Now I'm really confused. What kids?
Your kids.
What? I say, dumping the dishcloth I was holding and shucking off my apron while hurrying around the end of the bar. As a thousand scenarios run through my head, my chest gets so tight I can barely breathe, and my heart feels like it's stuck in my throat, choking me. Why are the kids out this late, let alone hanging around a bar? Please let them be okay.
Just stop for a minute. Take a breath,
Beau says, blocking my frantic escape by resting his hands on my shoulders and dipping his head down so that he's all I can see.
It's gonna be okay.
I frown. What is? They should be at home, safe, not in a car with a strange man. His brow arches high.
Strange man?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, well, this strange man picked him up hitchhiking about 3 miles back. Seems your car had a mishap.
My entire body goes still, my blood running cold.
What?
Beau looks over his shoulder.
Eric, Molly's got family business. She's clocking off for the night.
All good. I'll cash out your tips tomorrow, Molls.
I hear his words, but I'm too far gone to let them register as Beau reaches down and takes my hand, my heart thundering, as he leads me out of the bar. I'm so discombobulated, it's like my mind and my body aren't even connected anymore. All I can hear is my breath and the thump, thump, thumping of my pulse in my ears. And all I can think about is the kids hitchhiking, a car mishap, and God knows what else life is about to throw at me. I should have paid more attention to my gut feelings instead of trying to ignore them, because all night I've felt off, and now it's obviously time to pay the piper. The universe was obviously trying to tell me something, and now I guess I'm about to find out exactly what that was.
2. Beau.
What were you thinking?
Molly hisses through gritted teeth at her brother Coulson, while he stands against the side of my truck, looking sheepishly at his feet.
Don't know, he mumbles. Don't know isn't an answer, Coles.
He looks up at Molly and frowns, and I can see the war going on inside his mind. Does he argue, or just tell the truth and accept the punishment? Hanging back, I try to avert my eyes so as not to embarrass the kid. I feel for him, I really do. From what I know, he's a generally good kid. I never hear of him getting into any trouble around town, which shows how well he's been raised, considering he's a 17-year-old almost man who's practically as responsible for his two younger siblings as Molly. Hell, considering his circumstances, the loss of their mother when Cody was born, and the loss of their father 3 years ago, I'm surprised he isn't in constant trouble. A kid dealing with loss, tied to home with little to no social life, is an explosion waiting to happen. When I lost my father, I was a grown man, and it was hard enough to cope with. Losing the man I'd looked up to my entire life, someone who helped mold the man I'd become, left a fairly big void in my chest. I imagine Coulson feels something similar, too. So I don't envy this kid at all. I don't envy any of them, but I sure would like to make things easier on them, which isn't easy when Molly is so incredibly proud and determined to do things without any help. We wanted ice cream, Coulson mutters finally, gesturing to 15-year-old Sage and 11-year-old Cody, who are both sitting in the back seat of my truck, pretending they aren't hanging on to every word being said. We weren't doing any harm. You totaled my car. It's not totaled. It just broke down. Because you wanted to go out for ice cream? There's ice cream in the freezer, Coulson. You didn't need to go out at all. God, Molly, we just wanted to do something. We're always cooped up in the house while you're at work, and we were bored, and our friends were at Betty's. So you totaled my car to hang out with your friends? I didn't total it, he shoots back, his dark eyes flashing. I didn't even know there was something wrong with it. Why do you think I didn't drive it to work tonight? I thought you just caught a ride. He holds his hands out and shrugs. And you didn't notice the big red engine light on the dash? It's kind of hard to miss because it beeps, too. People ignore them all the time, and it stopped after a while. Thought it'd be okay for a short trip, but then everyone wanted to go out to the lake, and you were taking a 15-year-old girl and an 11-year-old boy out to the lake on a school night? Molly releases a sardonic laugh and folds her arms across her chest. I can't believe you. We were only going for a little while. I thought it'd be okay. You thought? I think that's the one thing you didn't do, Coulson, because you know damn well that while I'm out here working my butt off to support all of you, the only thing you should be doing is staying home, studying, and watching your brother and sister. Coulson opens his mouth to speak, but Molly stops him. We're trying to make our lives better here, Coles, not harder. You should have all been in bed by now, not making late-night excursions. Where the hell did you even get the money to take them to Betty's anyway? Because you know how I hate charity. I've been walking the neighbors' dogs. They pay me for it, he admits, folding his arms to mirror Molly's stance. You're working? Molly pulls her head back and frowns. It's just dog walking, he mutters, but she looks hurt. I do it after school, before dinner. Three jobs, Coles. I work three jobs so you can concentrate on school. If you wanted money, all you had to do was ask. If you want to hang out with your friends, all you have to do is ask me. And force you to work even more? We barely see you as it is. I want to help, Molly. Why won't you let me do something more than just babysit? You know Sage is old enough to watch Cody. I could get a job and you wouldn't have to have three. We could share the load. No. Why? I want to help. Because you're destined for more than this, Molly yells, pointing to herself as she does. You're supposed to have a normal life where you go to college and parties and I don't even like school, Molly gasps. What exactly are you trying to say here? That after all this work and sacrifice, you don't even want to go to college? Coulson kicks at the ground and shrugs. Maybe, he says, lifting his eyes to hers. I don't know yet. Molly holds her hands out to the side and looks my way, releasing a huff of air that seems to say that she can't believe what's happening right now. And while I sympathize with her frustration and admire the fact she's been working herself ragged to give her siblings the chance at a college education, something she herself had to give up, I also understand Coulson's frustration. He's on the cusp of adulthood, and he's barely even gotten to be a kid. Losing one parent is hard, but losing both feels impossible. And by the sound of it, he's conflicted, torn between making his sister proud and the weight of responsibility that comes with being the man of the house, too. He doesn't want to go to college, she directs at me, laughing incredulously. What am I supposed to do with that? Taking a deep breath, I offer her an understanding smile before reaching out to open the passenger door of my truck. You sleep on it, I say, gesturing for her to hop inside. It's late, it's been a long night, the kids are tired, and you are too. So how about you both take a step back, get some rest, and discuss this with a clear head in the morning? A long night, Molly repeats, while Coulson takes the opportunity to end the conversation and jump into the back with his siblings. When the door closes, Molly runs a hand through her blonde hair and turns to face me. It's been a long 3 years, and it'll be at least 6 more before anything slows down. I'm exhausted, Bo. And for what? So my kid brother can end up just like me? You're doing an amazing job, Molly. Don't sell yourself short, I say, as she presses her mouth into a thin line before sliding into the front seat and closing her eyes. Am I really doing that great, though? She says, when she opens her eyes again. 'Cause from where I'm sitting, this looks a lot like a shit show. Just a tiny bump in the road that'll seem even less so after a good night's sleep, I say, before she smiles a little, and I shut her in, willing her to understand that everything gets easier in time. When I round the truck to the driver's side, I catch Coulson's eye, and he offers a half-smile to me in thanks. I mouth to him that it's going to be okay, and he seems assuaged some by that. On the way from the lair to Molly's place in the foothills of Eagle Mountain, we don't make a heck of a lot of conversation. Molly seems to be quietly seething in the front seat, while the kids sit in the back, unwilling to say something in case they make the situation worse. Molly lets out a groan when we pass her truck. It's still smoking slightly, so I'll get a buddy of mine to look at it in the morning and assess how bad it is. But for now, I'm just grateful I saw them walking along the road when I did. Wandering the streets late at night, even in a place as friendly and close-knit as Kinleyville, isn't a good idea at any age. But hitchhiking, now that could get you killed. Thank you for doing this, Molly says when I pull into their driveway and the kids jump straight out. I know I lost my cool back there, but I can't tell you how grateful I am that you found them when you did and that you got us all home safely. It means the world to me, Bo. Anytime. I'm happy to help. I mean that. With a smile, she places a hand on my arm and squeezes gently. You're one of the best men I know. I'll find a way to repay you. I promise. No need, I say, feeling my throat thicken at the way all the little hairs on my arms have just stood up in response to her touch. It's like an electrical current has sparked in the air and is prickling against my skin. What the hell? Well, I want to, she says, hopping out of the truck. Thanks again. I nod and wait for her to reach the front door and let her and her siblings inside. But as I watch her enter the house and the lights go on inside, I can't help but place my hand over the space on my arm where hers was. It's still tingling. I've never felt anything like that before.
3. Molly. After sleeping in fits and spurts all night, my mind whirling over all the things that could have happened to the kids as they hitchhiked to the tavern, I give up trying to rest, and I'm already sitting in the kitchen with my second cup of coffee in hand when a bleary-eyed Coulson emerges from his room. Now, in the light of day, I'm torn. Initially, I was livid and couldn't understand why he would ever think it was a good idea to go out in the truck at night. Then I was worried about all the what-ifs and possibilities of things that could have gone wrong if Beau hadn't seen them and pulled over, or if they'd accepted a ride with an out-of-towner with nefarious intentions. Sage is a 15-year-old girl, for crying out loud, and Cody is not even 12. Coulson is older, yes, but it's not known, and hopefully never will be, whether he could defend himself and our siblings against a grown man, or even multiple people. And thinking I'd be okay with them going to the lake late at night? Ugh. Around 4 a.m., I realized that the person I'm most annoyed at isn't my brother. It's me. I'm their legal guardian. I should be here to supervise them. And if anything had, or ever does, happen to them under my watch, it's on me. All me, no one else. With a healthy dose of caffeine coursing through my veins now, I also see the other side of things. Coulson was trying to do something nice for Sage and Cody. It was ice cream and a chance to see their friends. That's it. His intentions weren't bad. He just wanted to give them a treat. How can I be mad at him for that? Hey, I say softly.
I can hear my dad in my head saying, "I'm not angry, I'm disappointed." And it's those words that are on the tip of my tongue.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?